Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. Hey, I'm Shauna Comptegame. This is Millennial Money, and today we're talking 4 lessons learned after making $1 million with author Jeff Goins.
Millennial Money with Shauna Comptegame. It will expand your brain.
So naturally you'd think, you know, you make $1 million and you feel pretty much like the world is the most amazing place. Well, not so fast, says author Jeff Goins. He made $1 million and instead of feeling amazing and euphoric, he was left feeling completely underwhelmed and wondered what in the world was behind this feeling. Around this time, he also started to work on his new book project that became Real Artists Don't Starve, the book we're going to talk about today. And it's a book about creativity and business and why money and art can actually go together. So there he was, writing a book on why money wasn't a bad thing, and he really wasn't sure he actually believed this message anymore. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Jeff. We're going to talk all about the book. We're going to talk all about his journey. And we're also going to talk about those four lessons he learned about money when he was making money. All right, Jeff, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. I have read your books. I've actually been following you for a while. So I am super excited to have you and to talk all about your new book and a few other things that I think our listeners are really going to enjoy.
Cool. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So you have this new book out, Real Artists Don't Starve, which definitely speaks to me. I always think I'm a kind of a born entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. But I read something recently that while you were on the journey to write this book, you were also on a journey yourself to what you said, put money in its proper place. And you talked about these four lessons you learned after making $1 million. And I would love it if you would walk us through some of those lessons and some of those takeaways. Because I think, you know, everybody thinks when they make $1 million, like that's the holy land, you know? Right. And it's not always that way. So I'd love to hear kind of your reflection on that.
Yeah, sure. So a few years ago, I set a couple of goals. One was to launch a best-selling book, and the other was to make $1 million. I did both of those things, and it was a very busy, stressful, hard year. And I got to the end of the year, and I had done the things that I set out to do, and I wasn't depressed, you know, it wasn't like a VH1 behind the scenes, you know.
Special.
Story on one author's demise. And at the same time, I wasn't like super happy. It just kind of happened. And I was underwhelmed by the experience. And so that just kind of sent me on a journey to go, well, okay, why am I doing this? Is it to make money? Is it for some other reason? And I don't subscribe to the starving artist syndrome, the mentality that, you know, you don't need money and you don't need to create art for right. any kind of commercial appeal because you'll starve. And a starving artist doesn't create. But I did have to kind of figure out what place money held in my own creative journey. And like you, I'm entrepreneurial. I can't help but see business opportunities. But I also realize like I'm not in the game of business just to play the game. You know, it is a means to an end for me. So the four lessons real quick were, you know, just very simple. One, money can't fulfill us. It's a tool, not a destination. It's something that you can use to do other things, to buy things, go on trips, you know, invest in other projects. But in and of itself, it's not a destination. It's not an end. It's a means to an end. The second lesson is just that money is a better means than master. Mm-hmm. And so that idea is a master is something that you work for, a means is something that you use to get something else. When he was at the pinnacle of his success, Walt Disney received a letter from a critic who said to Mr. Disney, you're just making movies to make money. You know, it's just a commercial mm-hmm. effort for you. And, you know, I don't buy it. And he very kindly, but somewhat sternly replied and said, no, we don't make films to make money. We make money so that we can make more films.
I love that.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, that's it. That's what I'm doing. I'm not making art to make money. I'm making money so that I can make more art. And in Real Artists Don't Starve, I end the book with that idea. Like the reason that you move from starving artist to what I call thriving artist is so that you can make more art. So don't get caught up in the process of just making more money, which is what I did. I started a writing business and I got a few years into it and I was like, okay, this is fun. I write something, I create something, I make money off of it. So I'll do more and more and more of this. And I think there is a tension there that we creatives have to live in where the money serves a purpose, but it's not the ultimate goal. At least it wasn't for me.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Don't you think that a lot of people think, you know, being an artist or being an entrepreneur that you have to struggle or that you have to be, you know, there has to be a period where there's no money and that's just part of, you know, part of the plan. I think people think that has to go on and that just, you know, continually happens.
Yeah, it's a great point. Shauna. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs suffer from this same starving artist mentality that creatives have, which is I have to suffer for my work. Otherwise, I'm not working hard enough. Otherwise, it's not big enough. Otherwise, I'm settling in some way. And I see this on Facebook all the time. People are writing about their entrepreneurial journeys and talking about, you know, how they were broke and, you know, now they're, you know, multimillionaires or whatever. And it's part of the romance of the journey that I really have to struggle and almost go bankrupt. Like I read that book, Shoe Dog by Phil Knight.
Sure, yeah.
Which is a great memoir on how he started Nike. But for decades, I mean, they were in seemingly, you know, based on the reading of the book, a very tenuous position, you know, often on the bridge, on the brink of collapse and bankruptcy. And you know, they survived that. Nike's, you know, a billion plus dollar company, and he's a billionaire.
I think he's doing okay now.
Yeah. And I think that's a really dangerous story because we see a handful of people who survived a very tumultuous journey and we go, oh, like this is what it must take. And that's a phenomenon called survivorship bias. Like you suffered through this thing. Therefore, the suffering must be required to get to that end result. I categorically reject that idea, especially because most of us have no aspirations of creating the next Nike. Most entrepreneurs I know are getting into the game of business to do the kind of work that they want to do, not have a limit on their income earning potential, and they want to have freedom. You know, they want to be able to work on the things that they want to work on during the hours that they want to work on them. So, yeah, I mean, I think for all of us, money is necessary. Starving does not help you get to where you want to go. And you have to find a way to use the money to do more of the kind of work that you want to do. And I early on was really struggling with taking my writing and turning it into a business when a friend of mine, a guy named Dan Miller, who wrote a great book called 48 Days to the Work You Love. And I said, yeah, I'm really struggling with this. You know, do I keep growing my business? You know, maybe I should just stop and you know, this is enough. And he said, if you have a gift for making money, you really need to embrace that gift and use it the best that you can and make as much money as you can. He said, because nobody ever said you had to keep it all.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you know, he's like, you could give it away, you know, but you have a gift and you need to use that. And that was, you know, that was kind of paradigm shifting for me. And so when I realized money makes a better means than a master, and it's kind of a bad metric for meaning, which is the third lesson that I learned, I started finding ways to take the profit that we were making from the business, which is essential to continuing to operate, and reinvesting some of that into the business, and then also taking it and giving it to charities and investing in other causes around the world that I believed in. And I realized, okay, you know, I grew up lower middle class, and we kind of had this suspicion of the rich, you know, and wealthy people, and thinking they were bad or doing something wrong. And I realized that's not necessarily true. I can use money to do good things in the world, and without it, life becomes much harder for most of us.
Sure.
And those were some of the lessons that I learned. It can't fulfill us. It doesn't it doesn't make a very good master. It makes a better means, and it's a bad metric for meaning. And finally, it has some effect on all of us. And that was something that I learned from that memoir by Phil Knight, Shoe Dog, where he talked about when the money started coming in, the money affected us all. He said it didn't affect us a lot and not for long because we were never driven by money, but that's the nature of money. Whether you have it or not, whether you want it or not, whether you like it or not, it will try to define your days. And our task as human beings is to not let it. And I love that. So I think, I mean, you've got to master your money or your money is going to master you.
I love that. Those are such, I think, awesome tips. And I think even though a lot of us, you know, kind of think, oh, well, that's common sense. You know, it's different when we're in the situation and we're dealing with money, or we're dealing with, you know, our business just took off or our idea just took off. You know, your brain gets muddled and things do get a little bit different for you. Mm-hmm. So I love those. So let's back up just a little bit to tell the listeners a little bit about your background. Kind of, how did you get to, you know, the point that you're at now, you know, writing these amazing best-selling books? What was your journey like to get there?
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance.
So I've always been creative. Oh, you know, when I was a kid, I used to draw Garfield cartoons. And when I was a teenager, I wrote songs. And when I was in college, I used to pass the time writing short stories and essays and emailing them to myself because Dropbox didn't exist at the time.
Right.
You know, and, you know, we all remember those days. And throughout my younger years, I always heard relatives and teachers and well-meaning adults in my life saying, hey, that's great. Do that while you're young because you can't make art for a living. You'll starve, right? You can't make music. You can't draw cartoons. You can't write for a living. That's not a very safe career bet. And I was like, okay, all right, that makes sense. You know, so I graduated college and I joined a band and toured the country for about a year, toured North America, did a little stint for a month in Taiwan. We were big in Taiwan.
I love that. I hit it big in Taiwan.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, it was hilarious. It was bizarre. It was a lot of fun. And I came back from that, you know, made no money off of that. I was actually a nonprofit organization, and moved to Nashville to chase a girl. Nashville is, you know, Music City, USA. Didn't move here for music at all. Just moved here for the girl. Got a job working at a call center, then a nonprofit. I was hired as a copywriter. I had very little writing experience. One of my jobs in college was as a writing tutor. It was just a way to make money, and writing was something that I was always good at. And so I was like, okay, I'll do that. And when I applied for my first real job at 24-ish, I had on my resume, because when you're 24, you put everything that you've ever done on your resume, including college job of writing tutor. And my future employer said, oh, I see that you're a writer. And I was like, I am. And I was hired as a copywriter for this nonprofit organization in Atlanta. And I took the job and I started out as a copywriter. Then I became a marketing manager. Then I started the first real marketing department in that organization and grew it to about a dozen people and did that for about 6.5 years. And towards the end of that, really kind of just felt this strong desire to write and started a blog and took everything that I had learned really on the fly. I had learned all this on the job about online marketing. I took all those lessons. I said, I've done this for this, a good sized nonprofit organization. We had over, 100, 120 staff. We're doing about $10 million a year in donations. What if I took everything that I learned about building a brand, doing it on the cheap? Basically, I had, zero marketing budget, using social media, email marketing, all the free technology, more or less to tell stories and get ideas to spread without, doing any kind of paid advertising or anything. What if I took all that stuff that I learned and applied it to this desire to write more. Could I build a personal brand? And that's what I did. You know, in about a year, I started a blog, grew an audience of tens of thousands of readers, and got offered a book deal, self-published a book, and, you know, did a traditionally published book in the same year, ended up creating an online course and quintupled my income from that job, which sounds like a lot, but it was also a nonprofit job and wasn't a big salary. And, right. You know, and this basically took 2 years. And by the end of 2 years, my wife and I had our first child. I had written and published two books, had launched an online course. I'd started a business, and we had both quit our jobs. And I've been doing that for, you know, the past 5 years now.
And the rest is history, as they say, right?
That's right. Yeah.
That's awesome. So this new book, Real Artists Don't Starve, obviously this is, you know, a passion project, it sounds like, you know, kind of compiling all of these amazing lessons. What are some of the key takeaways that you found when you were writing the book? Are there any chapters that really stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, so what I did was, first of all, ever since I quit my job to become a full-time writer, and I realized, oh, you don't have to starve. In fact, I make more money as a writer than I did in my day job.
Which is such a great message.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's not like, I'm not like one of those writers who makes pennies off of his writing and has to supplement his income, you know, doing other things. I make a full-time living off of my writing, writing books and doing other various writing projects. And then I make additional income off of teaching and speaking and doing other things. And so, yeah, I mean, I can say I'm a working professional writer, and I've been doing that for 5 years now and hope to be doing that for the next 20 years. And one of the things that I experienced in doing this was, like, especially in Nashville, a very creative hub, lots of musicians, obviously, but also aspiring authors, creative entrepreneurs. It's becoming more and more of kind of a technology hub, and it's got a cool entrepreneurial vibe that's growing here. And I bump into creatives all the time, you know, who basically go, oh, that would be nice. And I meet two groups. I've met two groups of people over the past, you know, really decade. One group is what I call starving artists. And these people who are struggling and are not making a full-time living off of their art, and they're traveling musicians, they're graphic artists, they're writers and so forth. And they're waiting tables or, you know, doing something else and just longing for the day when they get to create their art for a living. And they have kind of this woe is me mentality typically. And they also have a scarcity mentality where they just don't believe it's possible. They believe those voices that said, you can't do this. You'll never make a living as an artist. Then I keep running into this other group of people. Like, once you do something, you find other people have done the same thing that you've done. And I realized, oh, what I've done is not that rare. There's lots of full-time working writers, artists, musicians. They had a very different attitude about their art, most notably of which is that it wasn't precious to them. It was important, but it wasn't this precious thing that they were worried about, like, tainting by making money off of it. They had a very different mindset, and I would just call it a professional mindset. And so when I wrote this book, I wanted to tell the other side of the story. We all know the starving artist story. What we are less familiar with is the story of the thriving artist. And that is just as popular, and I would argue is even more of the norm. It's just kind of been hiding in the shadows of this cultural trope of the starving artist. And so the way I wrote the book was I examined hundreds, even really, you know, several hundred years of art history, from, you know, Picasso to Shakespeare to Twyla Tharp to contemporary artists and creatives who are making a full-time living off of their work. And I asked the question, what has always been true of creative success? And what are the rules that thriving artists tend to follow? And what are, you know, is there sort of a set of practices that successful artists have followed that unsuccessful artists have not? And it turns out there is. And it's basically these 12 rules of the new Renaissance, as I call them. And what was surprising about that was talking to full-time working artists today. So the book is one part history, one part kind of contemporary stories. And just talking to almost everybody that I talked to said, you know, I wasn't born an artist. It was something that I became. It was a choice. It was a choice that I made and had to keep making. And I love this idea.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was one thing that stood out to me, and I call it the rule of recreation, that before you can create great art, you have to first create yourself. You have to, and we're constantly recreating ourselves. And I think that's a really important message for somebody who's mid-career or was told by their parents or friends that, you know, you are this way and you're going to have to be this thing. Or maybe you've been telling yourself this. It's never too late to reinvent yourself. And I talk to people who are in their 50s and 60s and they were just beginning their creative careers.
Gosh, that's so awesome. You know, I think we always think, you know, if you haven't arrived at, you know, 25, then it's not going to happen, right? You know?
Yeah. Of course.
It's
great to know
you can keep reinventing yourself. I think one of the chapters that I loved, all these chapters, one of them that so stood out to me was stop trying to be original, which I think was so great because, you know, especially in the social media world, it's like, oh, we're all trying to be original and we're all trying to be different. But I love the notion of, you know, it's basically stop reinventing the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a fun one. And, you know, got to give credit where credit's due. Austin Kleon has done a lot to kind of expose this myth with his book, Steal Like an Artist, which is a great book about how good artists copy, great artists steal, a famous quote attributed to Picasso and actually many other artists. We're not sure who first said it. So ironically, that is a quote that has been stolen by many people. But I love what a historian by the name of Will Durant said, where he says, nothing is original except arrangement. And here's a historian saying that, right? Like, you know, there's that quote of, you know, if we don't learn from the lessons of history, we're doomed to repeat them. And he's going, look, there's nothing new. You know, there's nothing original except the way in which we take all the ideas that have come before, all the stories, all the big creative movements, and we borrow from enough sources, from enough influences and heroes and masters that have come before us, and we take all those styles and we rearrange them. We bring our own interpretation of them, and in doing that, we get to, you know, share some of our own voice and style with it, and we go, here, I made this. And people go, wow, isn't that original? Isn't that interesting? Isn't that so unique? And that's okay. You let them say that. Sure. That's fine. But we creatives, entrepreneurs, artists, we know the truth, which is that the people who are top of their game are really just stealing all the ideas that have come before them and then rearranging them into something that looks original.
Oh, I love that. I love it. Awesome. So what's up next for you? Where, you know, are you working on another book? Where can people find you next?
I mean, I'm still really passionate about this book. It didn't come out that long ago. And, you know, writing a book is a bit like a birthing process. And so I asked an author that one time and she said, you know, you would never ask a mom, when's your next kid coming, right after she gave birth?
Right.
I want to raise this kid. So I'm really excited about this idea. I'm, you know, kicking around some ideas for a new book because I like starting to jump into the next project. But yeah, I think this is an important idea and I hope it endures for a while. I hope it gives creatives, everyone from fine artists to entrepreneurs to writers and all people in between, the permission to thrive off of their most important work and to not believe the myth that you have to starve for your business, for your art, for your passion. You have permission to thrive off of this thing.
Tell us where everybody can find the book, where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can find Real Artists Don't Starve wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, all those places, local bookstore. And if you do pick up a copy of the book, go to don'tstarve.com. We have a bunch of bonuses there, including an exclusive private community for just people who are reading the book. It's kind of like an online book club in the form of a Facebook group where we, you know, talk about how we're applying these lessons. And I'm in there answering questions. And you can find that at don'tstarve.com. More about the book, and including where to get it and how to get those bonuses. And if you want to read more of my stuff, you can go to goineswriter.com. That's G-O-I-N-S writer.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us. These are amazing lessons. I think the book is great. It definitely speaks to me. So I'm hoping that everybody goes out there and grabs it and, you know, gleams some inspiration.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
whatever you're saving up for. A CD from Sandy Spring Bank lets you grow your savings at a guaranteed rate. Right now, earn interest at 4.5% APY on an 8-month CD special or 4.25% APY on a 14-month CD special. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com/CD specials. Minimum opening deposit to earn the annual percentage yield is $500 for the 8-month CD special and $2,500 for the 14-month CD special. Member FDIC.